Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. If you want to listen live, all you have to do is download the iHeartRadio app and search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Also, if you want to catch this show on video, be sure to check out Zumo TV, channel 719. That's where you can find Sports Grid's Fantasy Sports Network. Enjoy the show, and thanks so much for listening.
All right, welcome back, Fantasy Sports Today. Craig and Joe here with you, recapping our top stories for this Memorial Day. The NHL and NBA starting to make plans to get back to work. We're waiting on Major League Baseball, and all signs are pointing towards some positive things. Joe, real quick, the NHL looking at maybe 24 teams having some sort of expanded playoffs, and the NBA with this crazy idea of everybody going to Orlando to play their games. I'm curious to see that thing play out.
I mean, I don't know if that's
they have
crazy.
Several courts there, but
I'll tell you what, it's less crazy in the sense of basically you're quarantining everybody in a larger scale in a very controlled environment to play a tournament. It's kind of what people were used to when they were teenagers. You know, it kind of the same
thing. I think that they're going to play the regular season too.
Are they, or are they just, well, if they're going to play the regular season too, that's a little wacky, but if they were just going to do the playoffs at least, or some combination of those things, it's not the worst idea in the world.
It's a little unclear, but I think they have to play another 12 regular season games.
Right. You said because of TV rights, I believe you said, yeah. In order to get TV revenue. And if that's the case, so they'll play 12 games. That's what, a couple weeks of regular season games and launch
like a preseason.
Playoffs. Yeah, which honestly, I'm sure the guys will tell you they need anyway. So the NHL one's the one I'm even more excited about because like I said, playoff hockey, set it number one. It's an exciting thing. I'd like to see that. It would be very exciting to see an expanded playoff hockey. Hockey during the playoffs, there's nothing like, especially overtime hockey. Oh my God, so much fun. So I'm all for it. Let's get it. Let's get tournaments going. Let's get something going. I know Craig Mish is ready. Believe me, he is overdone.
Anything.
You know what?
Anything.
You will be in such a better mood for this show every day. I watched KBO this morning. This morning, it was on replay at 6 o'clock in the morning. I was up early. I don't know why. It was, something woke me up outside, and I flipped on the TV, and there's KBO, and I was saying, I wonder if Craig Mish is watching this right now, because we need something to get Craig back into his happy place. It's been a while.
I think I'm fine.
You think so? Whenever someone says, I'm fine, it's like Ross on Friends. When he
That's
goes,
my tell.
When we start doing DFS segments again, I'll wear a backwards hat for those segments. We'll call me Joey DFS, and we'll do it. It'll be fun. Maybe we'll make a Twitter handle for it. It'll be fun. But it's you know, sometimes there's stereotypes, but sometimes stereotypes.
I think that's fair. That's actually a fair one. All right, over to the NFL's first win in 2020. We've been covering several teams. We'll continue that today here on the show. And these are courtesy of the FanDuel Sportsbook Online, which you guys can view even without betting on the FanDuel Sportsbook. You could take a look exactly what we're showing you here. FanDuel has released odds for a lot of the first wins for several NFL teams, about a half a dozen. And today we're going to dive in to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And we start off with week one. Their odds to beat the Giants at the Giants are pretty good, minus 195. And so the overwhelming majority of bets will probably be on this, although there's really not a lot of value laying $195 to win 100. Week two, if they would lose to the Giants, if you bet $100 and they beat Denver at Denver, they're plus 230. The following week, they take on the Houston Texans, where they are plus 750. Then they take on the Titans, where they're 23-1. The Eagles are also 41-1, and then we're getting crazy here with Cleveland at 50-1. I mean, honestly, for the Steelers, no, it wouldn't shock me to see Pittsburgh start off 0-2 or 0-3, but 5 or 6 seems like a long shot. I hate to go chalk here and just say they beat the Giants week one, but I suppose it's a good matchup for them. But FanDuel in general is not really high, and neither is the USA Today. Those two places are not really high on the Giants this year, so maybe that's more of an indication of
that. I think it's creeping into your psyche too much. I think the Giants have a puncher's chance in that game. You know, first game back a little bit, knocking the dust off for Roethlisberger. Steelers are not, look, there's not Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell and the Steelers have passed. I mean, James Conner's a nice player, but he's had trouble staying on the field. They've got a lot more questions than answers. Juju by himself, we still don't have an answer of what he is without Antonio Brown.
They drafted a really good receiver.
They did. Look, I'm not saying that you don't have talent. I'm saying is sometimes it takes time for talent to come together here. And the Steelers at home, and Steelers on the road, very different. I actually would like to go to that second game. I think, going to the Denver game in Pittsburgh, that to me is the one where, you know, first game back at home for Roethlisberger, that crowd is going to be absolutely on fire. They're going to be very excited. It was a very rough year for Steelers Nation, and Steelers fans are everywhere. That is a national team. It was a very rough season for them. They did show some self-respect at times, though. There's no doubt they showed some fight, especially on the defensive side, but there was nothing going when it came to the offense and quarterback, especially. So it was a bad, bad scene for them. But I find it hard to believe that they get out of week two with two losses. I don't see that happening.
I mean, but I will say this. Of all the teams in the NFL with a big question mark, Pittsburgh is kind of one of those teams.
Oh, this is a huge swing.
If Ben comes back and he's not Ben, they may be rolling off an 0-5, 0-6. I mean,
it's possible.
They were horrible at the quarterback position last year, maybe worse than any team in the NFL we've seen in a long time. I mean, both those guys they had played terrible.
Well, look, so, if you're not going to get it in the Giants in Denver, like if you don't win
well,
in one
what
of those
if Ben teams, is just done? If Ben is just done, they're losing all these games.
Well, the problem is they have back-to-back home games. They have back this year. Brett's going to have to go look that up while we're talking here because back-to-back home games against the Broncos and the Texans, I find that hard to believe. If these games were switched, if they were on the road, very much so. But they are historically a pretty good team at home. And I don't know. I could very well see them losing that first game. That would be, you know, because every year in week one, we always have those things where nobody saw it coming,
week two,
right?
There's some value there for you. You bet 100
I think
to
there's
win
some
230.
Value. I think there's a lot of value there. And also, let's not forget the Washington Redskins and the Eagles last year. Week one, right? Who saw that game coming? Nobody.
Yeah, the beginning of the season is very...
beginning of the season is always weird, and this is a huge trap because the trap of this game is Ben Roethlisberger, Pittsburgh Steelers. Yeah, 2 or 3 years ago, that was a thing. I'm not sure what it is now, and I'm not sure that I'm sold that the Giants are as bad of a football team as everybody's putting out there because when you have somebody like Saquon Barkley, that can completely turn everything on a dime or Danny Dimes, so to speak. And all of a sudden you have a W for the Giants and a huge upset in week one that nobody saw coming. I just don't think it's going to carry over into week two when they get to Pittsburgh. I think things get right there, especially if they do. Is it still Rudolph and Hodges? Is it still those two guys?
Who did they draft?
I don't remember them drafting. Who did they draft at quarterback?
Wait, we're really...
Brett's just throwing out names now. He's got Paxton Lynch. He's got... I don't know. All I know is Roethlisberger better not get hurt. I think we could all agree on that.
Well,
right?
That Cam Newton ends up there, right?
Well, I thought Winston was going to end up there. This is something I talked about on the podcast, a couple months ago when we were talking about landing spots. I thought he was the perfect guy for them. You know, let's bring him in there with Tomlin and see if we can get him kind of, you know, in a different scenario, just out of Tampa, shake the dust off a little, play under Roethlisberger for a year, sit back, and then maybe transition out of that to a different quarterback over the next 2 years. But he ended up doing the same thing instead, took New Orleans, which is probably a better scenario for him.
Yeah. All right, now let's move on to the Indianapolis Colts. Let's take a look at the odds for their first win of 2020. They start off the season at Jacksonville, where they're expected to be pretty significant favorite. Looks like their odds right now are minus 310, so they're about close to a touchdown favorite at Jacksonville to win week one. versus Minnesota week two. If they win that game, you bet 100, you win 360. So the FanDuel assumption here is, yes, they're going to Jacksonville and they're winning, and you're making money if you bet anything else. Against the Jets week three, they're 7-1. If for some reason the Colts are 0-3, they face the Bears week four. Wow, you get 32-1 on your money if the Colts go 0-3 and then beat Chicago, and then Cleveland at Cleveland, 60-1. And then clearly the Colts are headed for a disaster if they're 0-5 and you hit on a 75-1 total. Look, I was kind of with you last year on the Colts. They did rally behind Brissett. They did have a good season. I think that was a good call. We just this year are going to see things very differently, I think, on Indianapolis, because I am not going to be a fan of Rivers going into the season, even with that good offensive line. That being said, the teams that we've chosen today, unfortunately, they do have some really tempting matchups to look at week one. And indeed, if Jacksonville is not done tanking, and I don't think that they're done by the time the season starts, I think they're going to probably end up moving more players. It just seems to me that even though it is an at game where they're on the road, I don't see Indy losing that game, even if the Colts aren't that great. And they only win 17-14 or 16-13, because I think that's the kind of team we're going to see with Indy this year. I don't think there's going to be a lot of points. I couldn't side with Jacksonville. So this is a pass.
I can't either. It's tough, though, because it is a road game. You know, first week of the season, you never
anything
know how
can
things
happen.
Jump out of the gate. One. You know, that's the tricky thing, is anything can happen here. And this is a trap spot, no doubt, because I think if you're the Colts, you think you're a much better team on paper than Jacksonville. So I agree with you. I think, unfortunately, it's chalky. It's the week one. They get the victory. But if they don't, and you think that there's a possibility for an upset, or you don't like Indianapolis as much as maybe I do, I don't think necessarily versus Minnesota is an easy game for them, but I think the lock is against the Jets. I think you are at home.
Everybody's beating the Jets. You got the Jets 0-16 by the time.
No, I don't. I think they'll win two or three games. wouldn't that be a scenario too? They got Darnold, and maybe they have a shot at Trevor Lawrence. Get Trevor Lawrence in New York. Yeah. I mean, Adam Gase will ruin that anyway. He'll ruin everything.
Oh,
you're familiar with Adam Gase's work, aren't you? I feel like you're more familiar than most.
Yeah, I am. I think that he's going to get that team the six or seven wins. I do.
I don't
like Adam Gase, but I also don't see the Jets as bad as you do.
I think the Jets are the bad team.
You have them losing every game so far.
Well,
when do you have them winning their first game?
No, I don't know. We'll
never. I think we did this already. You had them never.
I didn't have them going 0-6. Didn't they beat the Bears?
I think you had them like 0-5. Pretty much.
Well, if the record fits. Have you seen the roster, Craig? Have you looked at the depth chart lately?
Because maybe I'm missing something, but they were.
Well, look at the depth. I encourage you.
They played close with a lot of teams last year.
I don't remember a lot of close games with the Jets towards the end of the year when Darnold came back.
It could end up happening, but look, when these lines come out, Joe, they're, you know, Vegas, again, my favorite line, Vegas is building hotels on people that make comments like that. I'm not saying that you're wrong, but it's just nothing is ever obvious in sports. And
that's why I think
maybe this one is, but their total is 6.5 or 6. That's what the amount of games that they're supposed to get close to winning.
And I'll take the under on that one, when I'll take the over.
Obviously.
And everybody thinks the Giants are worse. I think the Giants are the better football team in New York. There you go.
The Giants and Jets number is very similar. It's not that far apart. It's just USA Today didn't like them. That was the key to that. All right. Speaking of win totals, we're going to hit on some baseball ones coming up next. Some indicators that may help you decide if indeed there is a baseball season coming up. So don't go away.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice, we play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Fantasy Sports Today. One of the great partnerships we have here at Sports Grid is with Sports Radar. They provide really good and interesting data for sports wagering, also for fantasy and all kinds of things. And really, they've helped us a lot with a lot of the work that we do here. You know, one of the things that I like to get involved in every year is the season win totals in Major League Baseball. And clearly, this year in particular, it's going to be a lot harder to do, not knowing how long the season is and what the teams may even look like here in 2020. So I thought that I would kind of take you guys behind the curtain a little bit and give you some of the thought process as to how I come up with these. And fortunately, I've been pretty successful through the years. A couple of things that before we get to the specific stat that I want to take a look at are things that I look at for Major League Baseball teams. You know, Joe, I don't like to get involved with teams at the bottom and at the top, because it's horrible, but they could win some games in April, and they could win some games in September. And conversely, the Dodgers win totals over 100. What happens if they have things wrapped up in early September and finish 5-12 at the end of the season? And it really doesn't matter. So in general, Joe, those are the two things that I stay away from as we begin.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly makes sense. It's amazing though to think of, you know, when you take out April and into a potential 80-game season, how different one hot streak can change things. And then maybe that's why people
streak. And it doesn't matter.
Or a cold streak, right, yeah.
The last
yeah.
2 weeks of the season are irrelevant. And
well,
so
I can understand. Yeah, I can understand. You know, things kind of marginalize in a 162-game season. They don't over half of a season. And I can understand people being afraid to go ahead with team totals under that circumstance. But maybe conversely, there's opportunity there as well. So I'm curious to see these Craig Mish nuggets that you got out here.
Right. And so a part of what I'll do is I'll pick a team usually in the 70 to 80 win range that I feel is not trying to win. And I know that that's, you know, maybe a little silly to say that they're not trying to win, but you could look at a team's offseason and clearly see if they've signed any free agents and how many aging players they have, how many players they'll trade at the deadline. And then in general, I'll go under that total. And that's been pretty successful. But the one stat above all that will tell you about a team's record the next year is the amount of one-run games they win and the amount of one-run games they lose. If a team is 500, you could just ignore it. It doesn't mean anything. But I want to take you back over the last 15, 20 years of baseball and give you the very best teams in the last 20 years in one-run games. And that's it. I'm going to show you the top three in the last 20 years. We'll start off with the San Francisco Giants. In 2003, the San Francisco Giants won 100 games. They were 161. Their record in one-run games was 28-12, 16 games above 500. And the following year, in 2004, they won 91 games. And as you could see, that's a win-loss differential of -9. Now, the Giants' win total in 2014 is irrelevant to the conversation. I'm going to explain to you why. You have to apply the number when it's going below or going above where the team's win total is. And so if the Giants are -9, it may not apply to them necessarily because their season win total may not be affected here. But if you had a team, as an example, with 85 wins and they had the best record in one-run games and their win total was 80 going into the next season, you would go under that total because you know that there would be a significant differential. And right here, it's -9. But again, you'd have to see what the team's total is in order to find into process that bet. So that's the Giants.
It's funny. I was just thinking too about one run games and wondering about bullpens and things like that too, because I was looking to see I was just curious who the closer was in 2003 for the Giants. Any idea who that was? Because I got the name for you.
2003
Tim Worrell.
Tim Worrell, yeah.
And then the next year,
I know him, but I don't remember.
Then the next year, closer was split between more than one guy. It was Matt Hergis and Dustin Hermanson. So a little bit less clarity in the bullpen. I wonder how that also kind of affected that drop off in wins.
The one run games are the most luckiest thing that can happen in baseball, one way or the other. And if there are huge outliers, it's something to take a look at for the following year. So the Giants were a -9. Now let's go to our second team. We're going to go over to the Baltimore Orioles of 2012. They had a staggering record of 29-9 in one-run games for a 76% win percentage. 2012, they won 93 games. 2013, they won 85 games. So there they are at a -8 differential. So again, if you look at a team's win total and you have a team that is somewhere in the middle of where their total was the previous year, you can expect them to lose about 6 to 10 games the following year. And if that number would put them under the win total, then you should bet the under.
Here's another, this might be a running theme here. Maybe we're tying something together here without even, you know, realizing it on the fly. The closer that year for all those one run games was the year Jim Johnson recorded 51 saves. So I wonder, is there also something to looking at a closer season that kind of came out of nowhere? Tim Worrell is not going to say 40 games every year, but all of a sudden so far we're 2 for 2 with kind of closers that you weren't expecting. And then the next season here, looking at the Orioles and the save totals, ironically, you're not going to believe this, Jim Johnson, 50 again. So I'm wrong. What happened to Jim Johnson? 101 saves in 2 years?
Yeah, I don't know that the closers are necessarily part of it, because they're just as unpredictable as anyone. You can have a guy 1 year horrible and then the next year is the best in the league. It's like the conversation that Kirby Yates is the best closer in baseball.
Well, I was just
the best
trying to think
in baseball that hasn't lost his job yet.
Trying to tie in, you know, one run leads or one run games.
It can happen. It just, you know, what it speaks
into
to
save
more,
opportunities.
Joe.
Just opportunities,
yeah,
not necessarily
conversions. But a lot of it is, Joe, is tie games that they go into extra innings and then it's anybody's game.
I see. That's, okay, that's fair enough.
That's a big part of it also. Extra inning games, you could look up that stat too.
This is fun. I'm learning. I like this.
All right, so the 2016 Texas Rangers were really good. They were 36-11 in one-run games, 70% win percentage in those games. 2016, their final record, 95-67. 2017, a -18 differential, 78-84. Their season win total that year was 83. And they ended up winning 78, and they had to rally to win 78. I remember this one toward the end of the season. So right there, those are the last three teams in baseball to have the highest win percentage in the game, in one-run games, and they all lost a substantial amount the next year. Now, you may say, well, but did they go under their season win total? That's irrelevant to the conversation, because what you have to do is, you have to identify the margin there of where the season win total for the team is. And if it's still very high, they may only lose 6 or 7 games the next year and still go over their win total. You have to match it so you make sure that that goes under the following year. That's
part. Yeah, it's really fascinating. Obviously, injuries have a huge part to do with this as well. Roster turnover, all of that can happen to do. How much have you looked at those factors too, as well as not just this one-run differential in terms of, is it a combination of this one run victories and having a lot of them in one year?
I'll always take the first thing I'll do is always take a look at the team that had the best record in one run games.
Okay.
The first thing that I'll look at. And then I have to start asking myself, like, you know, what about the team? Like, a good example of a team that everyone thinks is like the easy, was, it's gone, but was the easy under going into 2020 was the Pirates. Everybody's predicting the Pirates. Oh, they're going to be terrible. They're going to be. But you know what? Their win total is 68 or 69. You know, it's like it's not insurmountable for them to win 72 games and go 72-90. And yes, they did nothing. And yes, they turned over their team a ton. And yes, they fired their GM. But a 72-90 season puts them over, mm-hmm. and they still are horrible on this year. So you can't look at that and just call it, oh, they're just going to be bad. And yes, they're not trying. I get all of those things. But a few wins here or there at the beginning or the end of the season pushes them right over it. So that's not a team necessarily that I'll mess with. And the Pirates last year in one-run games weren't horrible. Yeah. So, well,
fun fact, you know, about that's... this 27 Rangers, by the way, too. 2017, that's when Adrian Beltre missed half of a season. So that clearly had a huge impact on them, turning over that roster. As the last year that Fielder played for them in 2016. But also in 2016, you had Sam Dyson saving a fair amount of games. The next year, nobody had more than 11 saves for that team, which is kind of interesting. They were running out guys like Matt Bush. They were running out a lot of guys that did not have a whole lot of closing experience or save a whole lot of games that year, too. So, like I said, I'm not trying to tie it in necessarily, but it is something to, you know, Alex Claudio and Matt Bush combined for 21 saves. So there weren't a whole lot of opportunities there for that team, maybe, or conversions for that matter, too, where they're unable to do that. But
right, but this particular year, the Rangers were 18 games worse. I mean, they were.
Well, horrible. I think you could put Adrian Beltre missing half a season there. I mean, your best player
but
out.
But how many? But Adrian Beltre is a 4 or 5
win player. Yeah. Well, but that's a
so
huge
that's
thing.
So that's 4 or 5. I mean, he misses the whole year. That's 4 or 5 wins. Fielder doesn't play for them a whole year. That's
well,
3 or 4
this
wins.
Logic,
they were minus 18 from one year to the next.
Where were the Yankees last year? One games, one run games. I'm really curious about that.
I don't have all. I mean, I just took the best teams in baseball.
Yeah, because I'm kind of interested about where they happen to be. Because if you factor in, you know,
you want to know who the best team in 2019 was in baseball, one run game?
Yeah,
make a guess. Who do you think? I gave you the answer already.
Oh, I'm sorry. I might have been looking at one point. And
I gave it. I subtly gave it to you because I told you what I bet against this year.
Was it Pittsburgh?
The Giants.
Oh, the Giants. All right.
They were the number one team in baseball in one-run games.
And now you have them without Madison Bumgarner and a potential shortened season where they're not bringing up any youth because it doesn't pay.
Well, now I don't know. Now I'm not going to get involved in it because –
Well, but look, anything. I mean, you've laid it out here. You've laid out a perfect scenario, a team that won a ton of one-run games. Now you're taking away their best pitcher. You're taking away a scenario where You're taking away their manager. You're taking away their best starter. And on top of which, you're taking away the prospect of prospects, potentially. Because why would they want to promote guys if they know they're not really going to be in it this year?
They don't
year?
Have anyone anyway, though. I don't know.
Well, DeBon, they have a couple guys. I mean, this, you know, the Joey Barts of the world are on their way. But there's nobody going to get pushed in this organization. And I think that's the point we're making is – I think you're laying out a perfect scenario.
I could go against you on all that stuff.
And a ton of age on that.
I would have thought if there was a full season, Samardzija gets off to a good start, they could trade him. Belt gets off to a good start.
Oh, you're the guy who told me about Samardzija's contract. They are not being able to move that contract.
Regardless, all the contracts are immovable with no fans in the stands. No team is taking on salary this year.
Right. Well, and that's the whole thing. Like, nobody's getting...
That's bad for a total because those players are major league players. They're replacement-level players. Like, they don't have players to replace them if they trade them. Now they're not going to trade them. None. Zero.
I'll tell you what. I think you've laid out the groundwork here to go against the Giants very, very well.
Not in an 80-game season. Yeah.
But I think even an 80-game season, there's a lot of things that work against them more than for them.
I don't know.
You've done such good work, and I'm basically saying, wow, Craig, you've hit it. There it is.
In a full year, though. There's too many variables this year. Something crazy is going to happen in baseball this year. Something wild.
I don't think that crazy thing is going to be Evan Longoria hoisting a championship.
Probably not. Probably not. All right, so how about the teams? We went from teams that had great one-run records last year in the last 20 years. How about the teams that had the worst? We'll hit that next. Don't go away.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you. because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn. And most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to hit rewind, you can see the teams in Major League Baseball in the last 15, 20 years that had the best record in one-run games. I kind of illustrated how you can use that in win totals. This is all data courtesy of Sports Radar. Our friends there who are great partners with us help us align all the data for us, and they will continue to do that here in 2020. We went through all the teams that had fantastic records in one-run games. All of the teams that we illustrated basically were much worse the following year. And we're not talking about two games worse, normally six, seven, eight, sometimes 15 games worse. The question is, can you now take this data and flip it and say, okay, well, all the teams that had really bad records in one-run games, they must have gotten better the following year. Now, if that was the case, then I wouldn't be talking to you guys. It's not an exact science. And this is a little bit murkier, but I think you still will find that one-run games are a great indicator. But let's start with the negative here, which basically shows that this essentially proves very little. Let's start off with the Cincinnati Reds, Joe. The Cincinnati Reds in 2014 had, in the last, 15 years, one of the worst seasons ever in one-run games. They were 22-38, 36 percentage in wins. Horrible. And that season, they finished 76-86. So you would just fully assume that, 2015, they'll come back and they'll play. No, they did not. They were awful again. And so using the data here basically proves nothing. A couple of things happened. The Reds completely dismantled in 2015, and all the things went against them that could have possibly went for them. But their win-loss differential even got worse, Joe, here. So simply just taking this data and saying teams that are really bad in one-run games always are better the next year, I think you're still going to be interested in seeing the other teams that we're going to talk about. But for this particular team with the Cincinnati Reds, it proved incorrect.
Well, 2014 certainly was difficult, too, when Joey Votto missed more than half the season. So that clearly was part of that 76-86 record kind of cooked in there. But, yeah, I mean, clearly the next year was not a quick turnaround.
The Reds got worse.
Well, I guess what happens is you have your best player go down, your team implodes, you look at it and you go, okay, it's time to strip it all down, and Joey Votto's getting paid a lot. Let's try to, you know, retool it, rebuild it, whatever you want to say. But that clearly makes a lot of sense there. But, I mean, that's a dramatic changeover. You know, 12 wins is a lot. That's a big difference.
Well, they lost 12 more games, so it just that's basically what I mean. Showed the data doesn't mean anything there. But as you'll see, it may be anecdotal just for that team, because okay, if you take a look at the Chicago White Sox in 2013, another horrible team in one-run games, 24 wins, 36 losses, 40% winning. 2013, the White Sox win 63 games. 2014, they make up all of those losses. Ironically, puts them right back to 500 in one-run games. What's their win-loss differential? Plus 10. So here,
you know,
you have an example of a team that made up for all of those losses the previous year. And by the way, still not a good team, but not nearly as unlucky as they were the year before.
See, I actually think the negative effect that we did in the previous segment is a lot easier to kind of gauge, because you look at teams just doing really, really well in one-run games, and you say how fluky one-run games are, and I kind of agree with you. Things have to break right for you to win those kind of games. It seems to be easier to bet on the regression in the negative sense than in the positive sense, I guess.
I agree with that.
I feel way more
I agree with that, but again,
uncomfortable with this one than I did last segment in some of these so far.
But again, let's say hypothetically that teams that win a lot of one-run games out of 10, six or seven end up losing a lot the previous year. Even if you're hitting above 50% on these topics that we're going to talk about here, the teams that lost a lot of one-run games to getting better the following year, it's still a good bet if it's above 50%.
So I guess there's a combination of things, though, that have to look right for you to want to bet this. Like, you have to look and see better bullpen, better pitching, better possibilities of those close games going their way. You know, because I think that if you're seeing negative, I mean,
you can't just look at one thing.
You can't. I think you have.
I'm not trying to say that. I'm just trying to give it a decent indicator.
Well, that's why when talking about the Giants, you know, having the best one run game record last year, all of the negatives I've just listed at them of being a good bet for the under, you're still hesitant. But then I think when you look at certain teams in the opposite way, you have to look at, okay, how
well you couldn't have done that for the White Sox in 2014.
Well, I'm trying to think, what was the difference between these two teams in 13 and 14 in terms of roster? Was there a player? Was there a guy that came in there that was the difference? Was this Jose Abreu showing up or Chris Sale coming of age there?
That could have been. Yeah.
I mean, it has to do with something
But is that 10 games better? That's not.
Well, if Sale is three and Abreu is three, that's six. I'm just saying, six and a couple flukes. There's your 10.
Well, we'd have to go back and look at that. I didn't.
Well, I will look for you because I know you're a busy guy.
Actually, not that busy. All right, so the final team here is the Miami Marlins of 2013. One of the worst seasons in Marlins history. It was horrible. Oh, witness that one. They had the worst record in baseball that season in one-run games, 407 win percentage, 24-35. 2013... their record was 62-100 in that year. They had the horrible one-run game. 2014, they come back the following year, more or less the same team, and they win 15 more games, 77-85. Jose Fernandez does make his debut. But, again, it just shows you their plus 15 is pretty impressive pickup for a team that really didn't change a lot.
No, that's definitely an.
And I'm guessing that most of the teams that we look at that had really bad one-run game seasons did get better the next year. It may not be all of them, but I think that you can use this data and you will find that as well. I mean, I didn't cherry pick these teams. I took the last three the last 20 years for both. It's not didn't just look to find a narrative here. I went off the
data. And going off the data, certainly I think where everything should start. Because I think that always gives you the best leaping off point, and then you can kind of piece other things together. Going back to answer your question about the White Sox, Chris Sale was there for 2013 and 2014. He was a 3.07 ERA in 13 and a 2.17 ERA in 14. So he certainly did his part. But the big difference, Jose Abreu shows up into that lineup in 2014, makes his debut there. That was his first season. So say what you will, when you put a player in the middle of a lineup, that has a huge ripple effect on everybody
else. But we have a stat for that now. It's called WAR, and that's that's the be-all, end-all. And if Jose Abreu's WAR, you could look it up that season. I don't know. I'll guess it was 4 or 5. That makes the team 4 or 5 wins better, not 10.
Not 10. But, I mean, like, also, how often does a guy in the American League pitch to a 2 ERA? That's a very fluky thing. I think you could add that along with, you know, you add that Chris Sale factor in with that Abreu factor.
I think it gives you 5 or 6 wins. But then again, you'd have to go back and look at all of their other players, Joe. And I would guarantee you on their 25-man roster, half the guys were worse the following year. You'd have to go back and check that. But that's part of baseball, man. Some guys get better. Some guys get worse. It's like the stock market. The Marlins that season, there was no secret sauce. I mean, Jose came in. You know, clearly was really good in his first year and probably contributed to 3 or 4 wins, you know, maybe. Stanton was pretty good, maybe 2 or 3 more wins there too. But plus 15 means basically the team was just really unlucky the previous year. It's pretty much it.
Well, is that another thing to consider too, now that we're kind of bringing it up and talking about it? Is there something to the mind of when you're looking at the data and you're saying, okay, is this team going to, you know, achieve?
It's a starting point.
Well, but I'm saying is then let's start looking at these other factors of the difference of these teams that improved year over year after being terrible, right? You look at it and say, okay, can we get – is this player who's coming up or coming into this organization a 4 or 5 win player, in your opinion? Is, you know, Giancarlo Stanton clearly was. That guy was incredible in the Cuban League. I mean, he was – you know, kind of like Cespedes.
I mean, who had Pete Alonso hitting 50 home runs? Who had Alvarez hitting 40 home runs? I think that those are all, I think they're all guesses, man. I mean, honestly, when it comes to young players and rookies.
Well, I'll tell you what, with young players and rookies, the one thing to consider nowadays is I think there's a lot clearer path. I mean, just look at the rookies from last year. You just mentioned two. You throw in Victor Robles. You throw in Soto, who's just 22 years old. You throw in all these young guys here. It's a young person's game. You know, I think Tatis.
Oh, it absolutely is.
I think
they're more ready than they ever have been. I get all that.
And I think you can start factoring that in to a certain extent. I don't want to say you want to overdo it, because for every one of those guys, you have a Vlad Guerrero Jr. who got hurt and things didn't quite go their way last year. But man, I mean,
Under last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Toronto Blue Jays.
And did that hit?
Yes.
Okay. So there you go. So
a lot of money.
Right.
They had a really good one run record the year before.
But there you go. I think there's a lot of factors, and I think if you're very careful about which ones you choose to look at, I think there's definitely some money to be made there. I'm going to keep thumping the table for this Giants one, though, because I'll tell you, man, I just think that you've made perhaps one of the best cases on this show for taking an under for a team in the shortened season, because I think the shortened season hurts this team. I really do. I see a lot of age on this team. I see an organization that is not looking to the future to bring guys up. I see a team that was without their manager, who's been there forever, their ace, who's been there forever. That's a lot psychologically.
But their win total is going to be like 20.
Well, I mean, you said the win total. What was the win total for a full season for the Giants this year?
72, 71.
Okay, so if the win total is 38, let's say, you go under that?
It's going to be 38. It's going to be 35.
Okay, so 35. You're still afraid of the under there?
I haven't made a final decision on that yet. I got to take a look.
You're an under 500 team.
I will not bet as much. That I will not do.
But if you think about it, I mean, 30. Let's say that any one game season, are they worse than a 500 team? I think we could agree on that, right?
The Giants? Oh, no, that's right. Their total's not good. I apologize. That's definitely not going to be there. It's going to be 30, 29. It's going to be actually lower than. I'm sorry. I'm totally wrong. But I just put it in half. That's wrong. They're going to be 28, 29, somewhere along those lines.
Yeah, I think that anything under 30 is, you know, more realistic for this team, because you've seen this pitchers. I mean, I don't know what Johnny Cueto's got left in the tank. You and I both seen enough Kevin Gausman in our life, I think, to have a pretty negative
opinion. That's all they were able to do
because of
the money. Why did they get him? For what purpose?
To try to fill innings and pray that they could catch lightning in a bottle with a guy? I don't know.
To trade him.
Well, they can only trade him if he's any good, but now I don't even know if
that's the goal, was to get him right and then trade him in July. They signed him for 1 year, $10 million, and then they give him away at the All-Star break for a prospect. That's why you sign a guy like that for 1 year. That's it. Yeah.
Look, I just think this is a team that's got all kinds
of
issues.
They're going to be horrible, but now it's a short season. Who knows? I'm scared.
I don't know.
I'm scared. Listen, when you're betting that kind of money, you're for $50, I'd still do it, but for $5,000, I mean, it's a different story, man. When it's that kind of coin that's out there, so
different, a lot more zeros there, a lot more zeros. Yes. You're talking.
All right, coming up next, we last week focused on a couple of games that I had been to in the past. I think you guys are really going to find this fascinating. Some really cool games that I've attended with the media credentials to go along with it. In fact, one of the games we talked about the other day. So we'll hit on that next right here on Fantasy Sports Today. This is Sports Grid, Craig Mish, along with Joe Pisapia, at Craig Mish on Twitter, at Joe Pisapia 17, at Sports Grid on Twitter. Follow us. We'll be back after this.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today. Hopefully you guys are having a good Memorial Day. We'll have Scott Farrell coming up a little bit later on, going coast to coast. Joe and I will be back here tomorrow morning as everyone gets back to work, sort of, with whatever you're doing, at 11 a.m. Eastern here on Fantasy Sports Today. Last week, I've said it before, I'll say it again. This by no means in this segment is self-serving or anything like that, bragging. I am very, very fortunate to have covered the events that I did. Note that I kept the credentials to the events that I went to. Took nothing for granted, that I will like let me keep this because I don't ever think I'm going to have a chance to do this ever again. And dug into the old book of tricks for a couple of games yesterday. Now, to be clear before we get into this, this was me covering the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I actually was traveled home and road with the Bucs for, I believe it was 2 years. I covered them for three. The first year I covered the Bucs was, I believe, 97. And that was Tony Dungy's first season as the head coach of the Buccaneers, Joe. The team still wasn't good. They started off 0-4, 0-5. I think they finished maybe 6-10. But it was that second year in 1998 where they went to the Pewter and they had Dunn and Allstott and Brooks and Sapp and all these guys that everybody remembers that ended up taking them into the playoffs. And so this was a one part of the 97 season and then one part of the 98 season that I'm going to get to.
Was but that was Tony Dungy era?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I covered Tony Dungy's era there. Yes.
Yeah. That was pre-Gruden.
And by the way, Gruden gets the credit for winning the Super Bowl, no question, with Tampa Bay. But remember, all those guys were with Dungy.
Oh, those are all Dungy guys. But Dungy also had a lot of playoff losses. I remember a playoff loss at Eagles. I remember some playoff losses to some other teams, you know.
That's why they got rid of him.
Yeah, Gruden got them over the hump there, so to speak. Yeah.
Against the Raiders.
Against the Raiders, which was his team the year before. Which if you go back to 2001, the season we just talked about in hour one, that was the Tuck Rule game that we were talking about earlier in the week. So that was definitely one of the crazier carousels in terms of coaches leaving and going and coming. And then, of course, Tony Dungy goes to the Colts and then wins there. And it was just kind of – you just got to keep things straight. Say, wait a minute. Wasn't he just there yesterday and now? Okay, and just kind of following
I felt around. Very bad for Dungy. That hurt that day when they let him go. He did a press conference and thanked everybody for the opportunity.
Look, you know what, though? It all worked out. And look, he's got the greatest gig in the world on NBC on Sunday nights, man. That's a great gig. And they do a great job on there.
I like him, yeah. All right, so here is the game we talked about the other day. I alluded to it, not knowing exactly what I was talking about, but I knew I had been there for one of these. So, okay, so this credential that you're looking at is for the Bucs-Lions game, September 12th, 1997. I covered this game. The Buccaneers played the Lions at home at Raymond James Stadium. Was this at Raymond? Or it may have been at the old stadium. I think it could have been at the old stadium. I'm not sure. I want to quantify that. I'm going to say it was at the old Tampa Stadium. Lions beat the Buccaneers 27-9. Barry Sanders rushed for 24 times, 215 yards, and two touchdowns.
He had
an 80-yard rushing touchdown in the first quarter and an 82-yard rushing touchdown in the third quarter and a 7-yard rushing touchdown in the fourth quarter. The Bucs led after one quarter 9-7. Work done brought them back into the game. It was a little back and forth for like the first half. And then inevitably, Barry Sanders just went crazy. And I thought that I was at a game like this that I remembered that he rushed for over 200 yards. And he did. And he crushed the Bucs.
Barry Sanders, man, crushing the Bucs. You said it and you found it. I do think, though, we need some sort of theme song for this segment going forward, like a where in the world is Carmen Sandiego, where in the world is Craig Mish kind of thing. We need something like the games that Craig has been to. I just saying theme songs are good. I think we've got a lot of time on our hands.
Or Danny or Ryan.
I think we need like a little Craig Mish head kind of traveling around the country. And you're like, yeah, there's Craig Mish throwing a football, Craig Mish catching a baseball, hitting a baseball, doing, you know, just kind of going around and then kind of set it up. I think, you know, God knows everyone's bored, a little entertainment. But look, Barry Sanders here in this game, I mean, this is what he did. He was a video game. That's what he was, a human video game at times. It's just crazy, man. And people, I know there's younger people who hear about Barry Sanders and they roll their eyes. And I'm just saying, no, you don't understand. And had he been doing this in this era of social media and highlight bites that are all over Twitter, can you imagine the kind of press that Barry Sanders would be getting? Just imagine it, especially now that fantasy football is blown up and the individual player is so, you know, so important to people.
Oh, it's everything.
Yeah. It's so different to think of Barry Sanders in, was this 97? Is that when this is? Yeah. Yes. As opposed to in 2017, right? If you fast forward all these years later and think
about what running backs are running for 80-yard touchdowns in multiple times in games.
Barkley's of the world, the Henry's of the world, those are the kind of guys that could do that. But it's crazy. But again, people don't get it, and the amount of play and the amount of views that the highlight reel runs of Barry Sanders would get in this era would be just stunning by comparison to anybody else. And it's kind of funny because he's kind of a guy out of time in that sense. And unfortunately, he just never got I wish he had won more. I'm sad for Barry Sanders. He worked so hard, and he was such a good player and a good soldier on that team for so many years, and they didn't win a whole lot of games. Some games, but not a lot.
Well, the Bucks would go on that season to play the Lions again and beat them in the playoffs.
Wow. And
a game that I went to. And then the following week was the divisional round. And this is my actual welcome credential to Lambeau Field. You talk about places. This is probably the mecca of all the things that I've been to. I would say is Lambeau Field. I've been there 3 times, and I think maybe 4. I don't know. Definitely.
And this was when it was still Lambeau, not the new Lambeau.
I don't know, but it was Lambeau Field.
No, but they redid the stadium a few years back, so it's not the same as it was.
I'm not sure.
In 98, it was old Lambeau Field, whatever that was, the original stadium. I am almost 100% sure of that. Brett, you can double check me on that, but there was then the redo. But what was that like walking into that area? Because that's like a small town that has a pro football team.
Was it Tom Coughlin's cheeks falling off gold? There's nothing happening in Green Bay except now there's a lot more happening than when I was there. But it's just the whole place revolves around the Packers. Everything is Packers. Like, they opened a Walmart when I was there. It was like a huge deal to go there that they had a Walmart there. It's just a really small town feel. Like, it really is.
Which is a college feel. Well, that's like the weirdest thing about it, right? Because people will say, well, we can't put a pro sports team in a small town. And then look at Green Bay. I mean, look at what that team is to Green Bay. And why can't you? Why can't you put it? I mean, it's cold and there's nothing else to do there. I get all, but still, like, this whole notion that, well, it has to be a certain size city to have a franchise for. Why? Why?
You have to have the support.
Yeah. I think
you have to have the support.
Well, when there's nothing else to do in the town, you're going to get the support, right?
So you get to the stadium when you cover a game, and I believe it was the early game. So it was a 1 o'clock game. That means noon. I remember getting to the stadium and it said 4 degrees on the big screen. I'm like, wow. So it was 27 degrees at kickoff. And I look back, it was the 13th coldest start time for a Packers playoff game all time.
And this was what time was this game?
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock. Okay. See, my experience in the frigid of Buffalo was actually a night game. It was a Sunday night football game, and it was single digits, and then it got to underneath. It got to the negatives, and I couldn't believe I was outside.
So the Packers won this game relatively easily. The Bucs had a little magical run that year, and then it just came to an end, 21-7. But the Bucs' defense was really what carried them, and even carried them into the Super Bowl the following year. Dorsey Levins had a really good game. He rushed 25 times, 112 yards, and a touchdown. Sapp sacked Favre 3 times. Mm. And Favre really didn't play well. He threw 2 interceptions in this game. Dilfer didn't play well at all. Favre only completed 15 passes, but what happened was at the end of the game, the crowd went nuts because when it was, I believe it was 13-7 late, and then they scored a touchdown, and then they went for 2 on one of the Levens touchdowns, and Favre ran it in. And I remember everyone just going nuts at that time.
Well, looking at the stat you threw in there, too, Mark Chmura catching a touchdown. Yeah, there's a name I haven't thought of in a very, very long time, but this was one of those great Brett Favre moments for sure. It's very difficult for teams.
He loved his tight ends, Favre. He was big on the tight ends.
But it's still true to this day. It's very tough to imagine those teams from those warm weather places going to places like Green Bay, where it's 4 degrees and winning a football game.
Impossible. Yeah. And Reggie White had a good game too. That was the experience I had there with seeing Reggie White. So yeah, it's like you would think that with all of the history and things that I've done, like I'd be talking baseball this time. But I had some really incredible football experiences.
Yeah.
And Lambeau was really at the top. Everyone's watching the game. It's the kind of game where you get done, you text somebody, and you're at the game, and everyone knows because everyone saw it. But the experience and walking out and going to Lambeau is definitely one that I'll never forget. And I made a point when I started covering the Dolphins, and I left. I was living in Sarasota. I left there. And I started covering the Dolphins. And I remember at the time the TV show we were doing, it was like a TV talk show. And we didn't have we weren't like a paid team to travel. So I remember talking it over with our production team. We're like, okay, we're going to go on one road trip like every year. 1 year we went to New York It was right after 9/11. We did a whole story on 9/11 when the Jets played right after that, I think. I have the credential for that, too.
No, it's the Jets, and Jets then, Chiefs, I think.
Whenever Green Bay was on the schedule, that was the game I wanted to go to. I wanted to go to Lambeau.
Well, is there a place left for you? You know, having said that, you know, that's the
for
one
football?
That's... For football, for baseball, for anywhere that you haven't been to that you really want to, that, you know, for one reason or another. Is there, like, that... Is there any holy grail left for you out there in sports?
I mean, yeah, I haven't been to some places that I'd like to go, but I don't crave it like I did then. I was covering sports.
TV
I wanted
here.
To go everywhere.
Well, now you're old and you got kids and you're married, but let's crave one more.
I would say Fenway time. Park. I've never been to. I would be interested in Fenway.
You got to go to Fenway. Yeah, that is a must. Fenway Park. I sat right next to the pesky pole in Fenway Park. I've never sat in a place where I felt like I was playing. I really felt like, hey, if I'm sitting this close, they really should give me a glove because it is almost dangerously close to the field. But it feels like you're watching a pinball machine. I was at Fenway Park. It was right before Mark McGwire got dealt, actually. And Mark McGwire was in his heyday. He hit a ball off the wall that hit the Green Monster, true story, and bounced back in almost to the shortstop in the infield. True story. Everybody in the ballpark's looking at each other like, did we just see that happen? Did he hit that ball that hard? Yeah, he did. It was like the Mo Vaughn, Nomar Garcia era of Red Sox. It is for a baseball fan too. I mean, I've been to Wrigley. I've sat in the bleachers for a game. It was amazing. But Fenway Park at night is something to behold, man. There's something about that field. There's something about that wall. There's just something about the lighting, everything in that. It just feels like you're in a museum of baseball, and it is the most incredible thing to ever behold. So I hope you get there, because I can tell you, it'd be one more Craig Mish rides one last time, it should be to Fenway Park, my friend.
We'll see. I don't crave it like I used to, and you know, it's different having a family, clearly. Back then, it was like, just give me a
credential. Take your son, road trip.
I'm sure now that's the next part of it, but I like going as media. I don't mind that. It's nice and cool. All right, that'll do it for the show. Thanks again to all of our great people working here at Sports Grid. And be safe out there for Memorial Day, the rest of Memorial Day. For Joe, I'm Craig. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning, 11 a.m. Eastern. Have a great day, everybody. See ya.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at